Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth. So we just had our first PMQs since that speech at Tory conference. Isabel, how did Theresa May fare?
Well, as with many PMQs involving Jeremy Corbyn, it wasn't catastrophic, but it wasn't very comfortable. So he opened by talking about universal credit. He talked about the divisions in the cabinet, told her that she should step down.
Lead or leave.
Lead or leave, that was the line. And he was pretty good on universal credit, and they had a good line about the cost of the phone line that claimants can call when they haven't received their money, which is about 55p a minute. But he then, as Jeremy Corbyn so often does, dropped it in there and didn't follow it up, even though he didn't get a particularly good answer from the Prime Minister. He could have made this a really key story from PMQs, a sort of symbol of how the government is trying to squeeze the poor until the pips squeak. But he didn't, because he's Jeremy Corbyn. And so I don't think she left PMQs with her authority anymore damage than it was when she went in, but obviously that's a pretty low base to be coming from anyway.
Well, James, Laura Pidcock of the Labour Party has suggested on Twitter that the mood was so bad in the chamber that she thinks this might be one of Theresa May's last ever PMQs. To me, it seemed quite boisterous. What do you think the mood was among the Tory MPs?
I think the mood was a classic PMQs in the chamber mood. Now, to be fair to Laura Pidcock, she's a new MP, and it hasn't been like that recently. But this took me back to, you know, to what, you know, my old-fashioned way of thinking were the good old days. It was a proper adversarial PMQs. Now, I think Jeremy Corbyn made a mistake in that he obviously can't ask the question about which way would you vote in a Brexit referendum tomorrow, because that would end up breaking apart his own coalition. He should have gone on the awful answer on EU citizens when she said, "I just don't know." And that, I think, is what he could have hammered down on. But, you know, there is another point here, which is various people have pointed out to me, and I mean, it's not an unfair comment, but, you know, actually, far more voters care about universal credit than care about the details of the Brexit negotiations. I thought with Theresa May, one of the things that you saw, which shows how this is not her natural forum, was that she came up with this jibe about Jeremy Corbyn living on planet Venezuela, which wouldn't be a very good line if she'd come up with him straight after he said it. But to come up with that 15 minutes later in answer to another question does show how this is not the kind of thing that works for her. But, set against that, if you had a kind of, I know I keep saying this, but if you had a kind of Robin Cook-style comments with former as Labour leader, you know, today would have been much worse for her authority. I think Isabel's right that nothing got worse for her today. And that, in when you're in her position, is a win.
And nothing got worse for her in terms of universal credit, in a sense. I think the government probably will have to announce something on this helpline, because it does seem pretty indefensible. But what I thought was interesting was that Heidi Allen, who's been leading the rebellion of, she claims, around 25 MPs, some of the MPs who are supposed to be part of this rebellion claim that that's not the case. She was very conciliatory in her question, which was straight after Jeremy Corbyn's stint at asking Theresa May questions. She was always going to ask about universal credit, but she was quite gentle in that she said that the Tories supported the principle, they saw it as a way of setting people free, and that they were going to get it right. And one of the details they needed to get right was, and moved on to that. She could have been much more attention-grabbing, much more aggressive, and she wasn't, and I thought that was really interesting.
Now, Jeremy Corbyn might not have wanted to dwell too much on Brexit, but Ian Blackford, the SNP leader in the Commons, did. He asked Theresa May how she would vote if there were a referendum tomorrow, a question she was asked yesterday by Ian Dale and came unstuck on. Did she fare any better this time, James?
I think he had a slightly better answer, because she didn't get into a ramble about how she'd make her mind up. But she still needs a pithier, better answer to this question. And I think one of the reasons she does is that things are going to get pretty hairy over the next few years. And it'll be very difficult for her if she's not said, but she clearly believes that this is in the national interest, that the pain is ultimately worth it for the gain.
So Philip Hammond has appeared today at the Treasury Select Committee. He's also taken a starring role in The Times this morning with his comments about him not releasing funds for a no-deal scenario until he has to, until that situation was necessary. Isabel, what's going on?
Well, this is his answer, I think, to James's call earlier this week on Coffee House for there to be a Secretary of State for no deal. Philip Hammond clearly doesn't want there to be one yet, and he wants to talk down the possibility of no deal, which a lot of Brexiteers will think is irresponsible, because actually, you do, as James has pointed out, you do need to be making serious preparations and contingency plans for no deal, even if no one wants no deal. It may still happen, and that's what Philip Hammond is trying to counter with his piece today, still sort of trying to show that his side of the debate is really in the ascendancy.
I think Philip Hammond is more worried about the internal negotiation than the external negotiation. And his fear is that if there was a no-deal plan, it would end up being used. So he'd rather... But this is the point. If you follow Hammond's logic through, which is not to spend the money until it is clear that no-deal is happening, you couldn't then spend the money in time. You can't recast the Port of Dover in a matter of weeks because you know that you're heading towards no-deal. And that is the problem with the scenario that he is talking about. I thought you saw Theresa May try and get him out of a hole when she was saying at PMQs in answer to IDS's question, she said, look, the Treasury will actually be spending some of this money. But I think it's another reminder of how this kind of cabinet tussle over what Brexit policy should be, which all is actually taking place, to be fair, at the margins rather than on the fundamentals, it really is beginning to affect things. And I don't think that Joe Bloggs is noticing it particularly now, but I think if it goes on like this, it's going to be very, very difficult.
And you think about the problems that are caused to the wider economy by even modest problems at Dover. Actually, if you haven't made plans, if you haven't started on some of the changes that would be necessary in the event of a no deal, for Philip Hammond, who is Eeyore-ish about the economic consequences of Brexit, not to be worried about that is quite extraordinary when you start looking at the detail.
I think the other danger is that you make no deal more likely because you are creating an almost irresistible temptation to the EU, if you don't prepare for it, to chuck a few extra things in right at the end of the process because you know that the UK can't walk away. It might turn out that one of those, the Prime Minister, especially if it's Theresa May, just thinks it's politically undoable. And so the whole thing collapses chaotically, which would be the worst possible outcome.
Isabel, is Hammond basically just deploying the George Osborne EU referendum tactic of basically don't make a plan for the result you don't want and then hope it doesn't happen?
Surely the George Osborne tactic was proved not to be a very good one, given that they got the result they didn't want.
I think there is a definite element of that. I think that there is a definite element of, if I do not prepare the life rafts, we cannot abandon ship. I do think he thinks that ultimately whatever deal the EU comes up with, however galling it might be to certain members of the cabinet, he'd rather take that than no deal.
Thank you, Isabel. Thank you, James. And you can subscribe to this podcast. It's called Coffee House Shots on the iTunes store. And to the magazine itself from just £1 a week at spectator.co.uk/podoffer.